Hello, I'm Dan Masterson, host of Strategy Talk. With me today are Austin Bay and Jim Dunnigan. Austin is an author, columnist, blogger, and contributor to StrategyPage.com. Jim is a military analyst, consultant for the U.S. military, and well-known author. On Strategy Talk, we discuss current events with our own unique twist. We report news as history. Welcome, Jim and Austin. Thought we'd talk a little bit today about the peace flotilla that tried to break the embargo around the blockade around Gaza. There's been videos posted by the IDF. There has been video posted by the Turks. There has been a lot of commentary on the news about here on the mainstream media. But what really went down, Jim?
Well, it's very simple. This is not the first time this has happened. This is, I know of at least two other situations where the Palestinians sought to basically send an information war boat to Gaza, you know, basically hunting for headlines, not for anything else. The first time they did it in 88, the Israeli center commando team to where it was anchored and blew it up at night when nobody was aboard, and the Palestinians abandoned that. Second time, they did what they did this time and simply, you know, got them out in international waters, arrested everybody and brought them ashore and, you know, processed them out of the country. What was different this time was one of the six boats was full of Turkish Islamic radicals who had said before the ship set sail that we are out to die. You know, we want to become martyrs. And they said a whole bunch, and this is, you can find this on the net. I don't know how much of it's in English, but there's plenty of it in Turkish and Arabic. And this was no secret in the Arab world. The problem was the Israelis didn't know quite how to play this. I mean, everybody's beating on them for a botched, you know, landing, but, you know, where's the playbook for this kind of stuff? That's what makes, you know, that you know, commando operations, special operations special. Many of them are unique. First time only. And if you, all you have to do is, you know, look into special operations a little bit. And again, through the wonder of the internet, there's plenty of good stuff out there. You'll find that this is a theme going through many, many, you know, special operations situations. So I wouldn't come down too hard on the Israelis. They had to come up with a plan. There were a lot of unknowns. A lot of, you know, armchair generals are, you know, using their 20/20 hindsight, you know, to point out all the things they did wrong. But that's a lot of BS. It's a unpredictable business, but they basically, you know, carried out the mission. The nine people who were killed were basically looking to be killed. We forget that the other five ships were like the ones, the two ships in 2006, they just put their hands up, you know, the Israelis landed, you know, and said, all right, hey, it's all over. You know, we're taking you in. But if you send a ship out there full of guys who are basically looking to die, well, next time around, they'll try Plan B.
Right, and it sounds like they're going to have an opportunity to see what Plan B will be, because there are at least one or two ships that are getting ready to try it again, from what I understand.
Yes, and because of the success in media terms of this one, there will probably be many more, and so the Israelis, you know, they have Plan B, Plan C, Plan D. And they tend to get it right, you know, by and by. They've been more successful than the terrorists. This basically points out a bigger problem, which nobody wants to cover in the media except in Israel, and that's the return of you know, of high grade, so to speak, anti-Semitism. And what's really creepy about this is that, you know, the Palestinians, especially Hamas, but the Fatah also, have for decades been preaching on their websites the destruction of Israel.
Yeah.
Now, they talk about the expulsion of the Jews from the Middle East, but, you know, a lot of them will let the mask slip and say, we want to kill them all. In other words, you know, let's do another Hitler. They're very pro-Nazi. You know, I think we have one picture on the site of the Hezbollah using their hand salute, which is the same one the Nazis used. And that's no accident. There's a lot going, you know, all the way back to before World War II, the parallel, you know, development of Arab and German anti-Semitism, you know, in terms of, you know, the final solution. Now the Israelis are acutely aware of this, and many diplomats, you know, people who are basically above all this, you know, point scoring in the media game, are concerned that Israel might do, as they say, something rash. But, you know, when you have within living memory, you know, one, you know, huge, you know, genocide, and you're confronted with another one, you know, you've got Iran over there developing nuclear weapons and coming right out and saying, we will destroy you. I mean, how much more obvious does it have to be? And then you have, you know, the European leftists, and, you know, leftists world over, but especially in Europe, not only supporting, you know, the genocidal, you know, wackos from, you know, Fatah and Hamas, and also throughout the entire Arab world. It's not just the Palestinians aren't unique in this respect. They're just more brilliant, because they've been let down by their Arab allies so badly. There's a lot of bad blood between the Palestinians and the rest of the Arab world, but they're trying to, you know, keep it to themselves. But it again, if you read the Arab media, it's patently obvious that a lot of, you know, non-Palestinian Arabs are not happy with the Palestinians, but they have to support them because it's become a matter of, you know, group honor. But in Europe, it's basically a return to the kind of anti-Semitism that bubbled up in the 1930s. I mean, it had always been there. And occasionally it flamed up and caused, you know, thousands of deaths. You know, we had the pogroms in Russia, you know, the blowback from the Black Death. And there were many others, you know, that are hardly footnotes in history books, but they are documented. They happened. But the big one, you know, was, you know, from 1940 to 45. And as the Jews say, never forget. But, you know, as a lot of Europeans are saying now these days, never happened.
Right.
And they're headed right back in the same direction. So that's what's really scary. But, of course, nobody wants to touch that because the media loves this anti-Israel, you know, angle. And they love to jump onto it as much as possible. But, you know, bringing up the specter of the Holocaust and, you know, genocide again, you know, it kind of puts a damper on all that enthusiastic, you know, Israeli bashing. But, you know, death camps is where it's all headed. And the Palestinians make no, you know, secret of it.
Right. Now, Austin, there's actually been some work done on the Free Gaza group that sponsored this, and some of the ties actually go back here to the United States with Noam Chomsky and Bill Ayers and some of the other ones that we normally hear about.
I haven't seen that about Chomsky and Ayers.
Yeah, it was some stuff that came out yesterday that I read about. But we've got mixed messages coming out of the United States government, too, with Hillary Clinton making some statements yesterday. How is
this? Well, the current U.S. government doesn't want to get too far out of step with its European friends.
Right.
That's
so,
what it really comes down to. And that's going to be difficult because a lot of our European friends are goose-stepping.
Right. So, Austin, where do you see this whole thing going?
What a statement there. Actually, what Jim is saying in a tough way is that he's back making the point about the rampant, hideous anti-Semitism that infects Europe. That's I'm just acting as an interpreter of Jim's stepping remark. That's what he's talking about.
Right.
And, you know, it's ironic. The ones who are least anti-Semitic in Europe these days are the ones in Eastern Europe who have an even fresher memory of totalitarian rule under the communists. That makes you very, you know, sympathetic to other people who may be getting, you know, dumped on in a big way. You know, the largest number of anti-communists these days are in Eastern Europe, not Western. You might say there are more communists in Western Europe, you know, and the majority of anti-communists in Eastern Europe. You know, it takes one to know one.
Or there's more communists in Berkeley than there are in...
Here, what I'm going to say is their communism and Marxism that you see out of this is kind of a pose, a left-wing intellectual pose on this. You know, Dan, I'll draw a question out of where you were going on that. A couple of the organizations, the NGOs that were involved in the aid convoy in my opinion, from what I know about them, and especially one out of Turkey, is they do have Islamist ties. Now, you might find adjectives and adverbs to shift the kind of Islamist they're dealing with, you're dealing with in some of the non-governmental organizations, but that also ends up playing a game of count the trees, miss the forest, looking at minutia. What you had here, and Jim packaged it in one way. Let me give you another take on it. He's saying the same thing. This is in a blockade running attempt. That's really what it was. And it was a blockade running attempt that is using both. It's an information warfare operation, but it also uses an information media as a part of its political and they hope physical defense. You know, we're out here because we say we are bringing relief supplies to a blockaded city. The reason the Israelis blockaded is why? Oh, I'll answer that. They fire rockets out of Gaza. Even the Egyptians recognize that the Israelis, and I say even the Egyptians have to an extent helped the Israelis with the blockade. Lots of smuggling going on, but the idea is to keep arms, especially from Iran, ending up inside Gaza and more rockets because they fire them at the Israelis and the Israelis come back and crack back at Gaza. What they're doing is an attempt, again, to keep more of those rockets from ending up in the hands of Hamas and other radical actors inside Gaza. So the peace convoy is really a convoy about breaking a blockade that is ultimately about acts of warfare, that is firing rockets on the Israelis. And the Israelis are being attacked by all the political actors that Jim mentioned, by numerous media actors that all they see is, or all they want to see, is that superficial cover story of a relief convoy. And that's it. They don't look deeper and see, but wait a minute, this is an attempt to break the blockade. What happens when you break the blockade? Well, other organizations, the bad actors, come in and start shipping in ammunition, rockets, and weaponry. The Israelis told the convoy leaders, you land it where we can inspect it, and then if it is, quote-unquote, legal material, foodstuffs, medicines, and the like that can be allowed through the blockade, then we'll bring it on in. We'll ship it on in, for it. Now, Jim explained quite succinctly why every special operation is a special operation. Did the Israelis execute this commando operation? Well, no, I don't think they did. I think this is obviously it's not even mediocre. They messed up important dimensions of the operation, and some of the dimensions might even include Twitter. Digital communication, so you could have people, you know, with cell phones taking pictures of commandos coming down rappelling lines from helicopters. They clearly didn't anticipate the possibility of assault. Again, who were those on board the ship? I'm losing the name for a minute. Marmara is part of it, as in the Sea of Marmara. I'm guessing
the Turkish ship.
Yeah, the Turkish ship. They didn't do a pre-op assessment on that. What if there's resistance? As one commentator I read early this morning says, you know, you always have to think about what if there are a couple of wolves with AK-47s among the sheep, and with something that is a yes, this is a special operation. This is very, very gray area for the Israelis because it's both this is a police operation of a type, you know, akin to landing on a ship that could be smuggling drugs. You know, when the Coast Guard does that, or customs officials or the like, heck, this could turn into a military type firefight. Was that calculated? Maybe not, but the Israelis are left. I mean, just looking at it objectively, with a political problem, a media problem, in some ways, you could look at this as psychological warfare and a successful media information ambush. But there's also a real-world demonstration, and I'm using demonstration in an old military term, where you have something moving around in front of you that you want to send a message to your opponent, or maybe you want to attract his attention, maybe you want to sucker him into an attack at your feint or your demonstrating force. I'm talking on Civil War, Napoleonic terms, maybe in classical linear battlefield terms. But this was another military term for it, information operation with a kinetic line of operation, meaning a real-world physical demonstration. As I said, it was well thought out, as I look back at it, by those in the quote-unquote who organized this peace convoy, well thought out up to this point. And this gets us to our whatever the next phase is going to be. The Israelis did respond. You know, this first, when I criticized and say how poor the operation was, they responded with force because they ultimately understand behind this quote-unquote peaceful convoy is war. They understand that this is really, as I said, a feint. It's a fog. It's a camouflage. And they pierced it to the point saying, you're going to do this, and you think you're going to get away with it, and you're not touchable. You're on the battlefield. And that message was sent. So you see, what I'm suggesting out of this and this interpretation that I'm giving you, Dan, is that is the point to register, quote unquote, on all the complaints and attacks that the Israelis are getting in the media. They've also made a battlefield statement. And do you remember the little ditty about the gingerbread man? I'm going to run as fast as I can. You can't catch me. I'm the gingerbread man. It's a little about, you know, gingerbread cookie man. He thinks he's beyond being caught and eaten. And of course he gets caught and he gets eaten. To some degree, a lot of these organizations that cast themselves as quote unquote peace activists and the like play with the notion that they're not going to get caught. This time, bad as it was, and with all the repercussions, they got caught. They're on the battlefield. The Israelis said, you're on it. We recognize it. You pushed it. We pushed back. I want to see how that dynamic plays out in the next few months.
Right. Now, Jim, we ran with this quite heavily about less than a year ago, but the Israelis were highly motivated to stop these ships because of a ship that almost went into Lebanon with a lot of weapons.
Yes. We don't know, you know, just what Israeli intelligence has been doing. We know they're capable. We know they are, as you point out, you know, very concerned about the several Iranian attempts to slip a weapon ship into Gaza. The thing the Israelis are most concerned about with Gaza is the Iranians getting the longer range missiles, the ones with, you know, ranges of 90 to a couple hundred kilometers, which can hit, you know, the heavily populated parts of Israel. The ones that are being used now out of Gaza, the homemade or the 122-millimeter, you know, Russian-designed rockets, can't go more than 20 or so kilometers, and there's not much down in southern Israel. It's a desert. It's very thinly populated. But if you can go 100 kilometers, you start to get into densely populated urban areas, and accuracy doesn't matter that much, you know, just making a big bang, and you can kill hundreds of people. So they are very concerned about that. That said, they were basically playing a chess game, you know, with this latest operation because there were six ships. We don't know, you know, exactly what ears and eyes they had on the ships. We can assume from past operations that they were devoting a considerable amount of intelligence effort to it. We don't know, that would appear that they didn't know exactly what tactics, you know, the Turkish, radicals were going to use. It would appear that they knew that the Turks, all the radicals were on one ship, but again, that's not absolutely, you know, again, we don't know what they knew. But I would presume that, you know, they're not going to back off on this. They can't afford to. They can't afford to let an uninspected ship, you know, swan into a Gaza port, and unload whatever's on board. This is putting Israeli lives at risk. I mean, remember, Israel, unlike all the other countries in the Middle East, is a democracy, and the voters are very quick, you know, to remove politicians who do not serve their interests. That really is something that a lot of the local neighbors don't understand. And the people in the UN, many of whom come from non-democracies, do not understand and appreciate. But it's a very important factor in determining, you know, what the Israeli military response will be to any real or perceived threat. And so, you know, just keep in mind, if you take nothing else away from this podcast, the Israelis do not want long-range missiles in Gaza. And the only way you can bring these missiles in, because they're too big, really, for all practical purposes, to go through the tunnels, is by ship. And the Israelis have caught Iranian ships trying to do this in the past. Actually, they caught several and sank a few of them. So they're not about, you know, to let this happen. It's simply off the table, non-negotiable. So it's, as Dan points out, it's going to get interesting, you know, as these other attempts, you know, go forward.
Right. Now, one of the things that's been hot on the site, Jim, is the reporting of the nuclear-armed submarines that Israel has placed down in the Gulf.
That's been in play for several years now. Actually, what really made it a player, as it were, was the Egyptian decision 2 years ago to allow Israeli submarines to transit the Suez Canal. Now, for years, no Israeli ship, you know, merchant or otherwise, you know, could transit the Suez Canal because the Egyptians, you know, were angry with Israel and what have you. Now, bit by bit, first commercial shipping. Now, in the last couple of years, warships, especially submarines. Now, they're doing this as, you know, as they are, you know, joining with Israel on the blockade of Gaza for their own interests. They're helping with the blockade because they're afraid of the many Islamic terrorist groups that have taken residence in Gaza, and several of those groups are groups that are dedicated to committing terrorist acts in Egypt. Now, they've tried to negotiate with Hamas over this, and they haven't gotten very far. That's why they've strengthened the anti-tunnel operations and defenses, you know, along, you know, the border with Gaza. Now they made a big deal out of recently opening up, you know, the border, which was purely a publicity stunt, because the Gazans are not starving. They never were. They're merely being overtaxed by Hamas, but that's another story that doesn't get reported much. Egypt wants to allow Israeli submarines into the Red Sea and off the coast of Iran because the Arab world is basically moving closer to war with Iran. Iran makes no secret of the fact that it believes it should be running, you know, the Muslim world. And, you know, that's pretty bold because they're Shia, which is only about 8 or 9% of all Muslims. But they believe, and they, again, this is a matter of public, you know, pronouncement, which they never tire of talking about, that the Saudi Arabs are basically not competent to be the guardians of the two most holy, you know, shrines in the Islamic, you know, world. And this obviously irritates, you know, the Saudis no end. But it also irritates Arabs in general, because one of the bones of contention that has always existed in the Muslim world is this idea that all Muslims are brothers, but Arab Muslims are a little better brothers, a little bigger brothers, because the scripture is written in Arabic, and you're supposed to, if you're going to learn the Quran, you learn to recite it in Arabic, a language which the majority of Muslims don't understand. With the rise of Al-Qaeda, you have a bunch of Islamic you know, fanatics who will kill anybody who does not follow their particular, you know, old school, old fashioned brand of Islam. And on top of that, they make a big deal. They're not quiet about this business of that, the best Muslims are Arabs, of course. Yeah, again, this has always been, you know, something that, you know, polite Muslims didn't even discuss, but it was always there. Al-Qaeda makes no secret of it. Say, hey, you monkeys, you non-Arabs, you know, kowtow to us, and that doesn't go down well. That's why a lot of, you know, Arab Al-Qaeda members have been killed by Taliban in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. Again, that doesn't make big headlines, but it's happened, you know, quite a lot. And it all goes back to what happened before 2001, before 9/11, when the Taliban was using a brigade of non-Afghan Al-Qaeda, you know, gunmen as their enforcers. The Arabs in that brigade were quite enthusiastic about sticking it to these, you know, these non-Arab, disobeying, your tribesmen. So this is a problem which is played into the, you know, into the Israelis, to the Israelis' benefit, because it lets them get those submarines in there. You know, the enemy, my enemy is my friend. You know, so it's one thing the Arabs and the Jews, the Israelis can agree on. Iran has to be stopped. But quite frankly, the Arabs would rather let the Jews do it.
Right. There's also some stuff going on that we wrote about, Austin. Have you comment on this, about the Israelis putting together some plans to hit Hezbollah hard if Hezbollah steps out of line again?
Well, look, the Israeli examination of what went wrong and what went right in the 2006 scrape war in southern Lebanon. The southern Lebanon has been an intense scrub after action report. You saw some lessons learned applied, and including the extraordinarily tight timing for some of the strikes on Hamas leaders in the last Israeli major operation in Gaza. So, here, to answer your question about, you know, Hezbollah and Hamas, I don't think the Israelis are doing now anything special for Hezbollah, except refine the same kinds of techniques they employed in Gaza on the last major operation. Notice how successful and how aware they were, I guess that's a better way to put it, of the media implications of many things they were doing. You know, the story, this is something we had in a lot of coverage on, with the phone calls the Israeli intelligence made to Palestinians in Gaza, individuals, families, they had identified as civilians that were really being used as human shields for Hamas weapons caches. I suspect, and again, this is a suspicion, but take a look at what was done in Gaza. I think that is the same kind of highly granular intelligence, right down to identifying the allegiances, participation or non-participation of individuals, at least within the within the first 15 to 20 kilometers of southern Lebanon. Tough to do. I mean, it's impossible to do it with any degree of with absolute certainty. But they've certainly shown that they can do it to a point where they mitigate some of the information blowback that Hezbollah and Hamas and their allies around the globe are going to launch at the Israelis with, or Israelis respond to, and I'm suspecting that in your scenario, I didn't ask, but you mean new rocket attacks from Hezbollah land in southern Lebanon. Southern Lebanon is a place that the Iranians can resupply, and based on what we've had up on strategy page, they have resupplied with rockets. The Israelis can't impose the same kind of tight blockade on southern Lebanon as they have on Gaza. And look, this has happened before. I don't think this is highly speculative, but it's something that I think the boys in Tehran, who actually pull the strings on Hezbollah, have considered, see how the political situation plays out vis-a-vis the peace convoy and the Israelis and Hamas, and maybe it's time to fire a few rounds from, as they think, from southern Lebanon by Hezbollah to, quote-unquote, show solidarity with the Gazans who are surrounded by the Israelis and being strangled and being starved to death, etc. You get in the propaganda accompanying the rocket attacks. There's something else to calculate on this, which is that the Israelis are going to respond. They're not just going to sit there and let you do this to them. They have refined some of their techniques. Who knows? They might even use some of the refined techniques if they decide that we're just going to have to show you what we're going to do and curl up and curl up should go into a very, very aggressive posture. Which I'll tell you who's going to lose in that. You know, the people living in southern Lebanon and the Gazans and the Palestinians again. What you're going to do is drive any of the Israelis and the Israeli political spectrum that were prone, and that at one time was a significant portion of the Labor Party, Dan, making some sort of a land for peace deal or a quote-unquote a two-state option of that gave really a great deal of autonomy to the Palestinians. You're going to have fewer and fewer people like that within Israel, and you're going to have everyone's going to blow back on the Gazans and the Palestinians, and then is that the Israelis are going to impose, well, we're just going to impose our own solution. This is it. You're going to attack us, and you attack us too hard, maybe we'll take another bite. How does this play with the rest of the world? Oh, see, they're just trying to grab as much as they can, and the Iranians will use that to exploit for their own political purposes. And you start moving closer and closer to the really, really large confrontation, which Jim touched on a moment ago, between Israel and Iran, and the Israelis are not going to let the Iranians destroy them. I mean, when I say Iranians, remember, I'm talking about the Khomeini regime, the Khomeinists, the Revolutionary Guards group in Iran, because there's a disaffected population in Iran that doesn't like their own government. So it's a complex mess, and what I have in the last two or three times you've asked me questions about the Israelis, I see them becoming more militant. So,
Jim, would you agree with that?
Wrong.
Jim, would you agree with that?
Yes, and many people are concerned about it. I mean, the Israelis feel increasingly isolated. You know, they read all this media coverage about how they're devils, et cetera, you know, Europeans. And, you know, non-Arabs are starting to sound like the Arabs, calling them all sorts of bad names, and they're simply trying to stay alive. And, of course, Iran is there making all sorts of dire threats, and people just poop, oh, that's just the Iranians. But, hey, you know, there's a history here. There's a precedent. And the Israelis are not about to give up their nuclear weapons, and they may be about to use them. All somebody has to do is, you know, pop a missile on to Israel, you know, whether it's nuclear or chemical or not. You know, the Israelis are not about to, you know, take chances.
Right. And, you know, I think this is where we always come to at the end of this discussion is the Israelis are fighting for their existence and they're going to do whatever they have to do to stay alive.
Exactly. And anybody who dismisses that, you know, is just out of touch with, you know, history and reality.
Right.
Well, there are plenty to do, though. They get extremely legalistic. That's what I mean by extremely narrow focus. And, you know, they learn a lot by focusing on the little pieces. And like I said, in a lot of ways, this is a bad, a messed up operation.
Right.
But at the same time, the big message behind it is, and like, is that, excuse me, you camouflaged blockade runners, camouflaged under the quote-unquote international community peace activists like this. You guys are on the table now, and don't think you're getting away with it. That's something that the very, very smart, not the passionate ideologues that are out there, is the what's the term, Jim? You like to use the Lenin term, useful idiots.
Yes,
it's the useful idiots that are going to get caught on it. They're very cynical and calculating leaders behind them need to think about that indication of the Israeli commando operation.
Right. Well, thank you for your time, gentlemen. We've reached the end of it, and we'll talk to you next time.